Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
But yeah, welcome to our live stream this afternoon. My name is Mark Johnston. Like I said, generally, Heather Choate is with me. Today, we are going to be talking about, you know, some good stuff here. We're going to be talking about, is there hope for your marriage? I know a lot of people have put into one of our forums, they wanted us to take a look at, you know, some of the situations that were going on and to kind of just kind of evaluate, see what we can do and whether certain situations are viable. So Heather is right there supporting me in the comments. She says first from Phil. So we're just going to dive right in with the things here. So first from Phil. Phil is saying we've been married for 2 years. She left the house 4 months ago. The house was on the market, and now she decided to take it off for the holidays. We have spoken to a mediator, but that is currently on hold as well. I've been working on communication. She will open up to me and then back off very abruptly for a bit. All right, from the little bit that Phil gave me, some information is standing out. So first off, one of the things that I noticed was the short nature of the relationship. They've been married for 2 years or a little bit under 2 years. And that's actually not such a bad thing. What I notice in these situations is it's a little bit different than a more like a long-term or entrenched relationship, because a lot of times the reasons for leaving after with like a long-standing relationship, something like 10 plus years, is those problems tend to have been dug in, and there's this kind of sense of hopelessness in creating some solutions in some of these longer term problems especially. So the fact that Phil has been married for 2 years, it's not too far removed from a really happy time when, you know, both he and his wife were really committed to the relationship. Now, even further, I'm seeing, you know, some discussion with a mediator, and I'm not sure if that's like mediating the separation or whatnot. But, you know, the other comment here is that they're separated but talking every day. She'll open up and then back off. It tells me there that something is being left unaddressed. As in, we get kind of this hot and cold or these roller coaster sort of situations, usually when there's been some sort of significant event, some sort of painful event, and, you know, the person is trying to push that down, but they keep getting reminded of whatever is happening. Why I'm bringing this up is that in this scenario, I can see a lot of use or a lot of good happening by calling attention to some of this back and forth sort of behavior and actually discussing why his wife might be backing off suddenly, why she might be getting cold feet, what she might be concerned about. You know, like the whole question here is like, is this a viable situation? And it's hard for Heather or myself to say, yes, clear cut, this is absolutely fixable or not. And this is how I'm going to frame a lot of these as we discuss it today. You know, I'm going to frame it as, you know, if Phil and his wife are able to have some more open conversation about some of these feelings that are causing her to back off, you know, that would probably be really helpful and make it a lot more viable. If the two of them are able to define some success, as in terms of like what needs to happen, and they're both able to see that there's a way out of this, that would also probably be very useful. You know, the communication every day by itself isn't going to do everything in and of itself. It's like a lot of it is about how much hope can we instill in the situation. And certainly that's a tricky situation if there is that back and forth. So for in this case, and I'm going to guess in a lot of cases where it's kind of up in the air, you know, like my recommendation is going to be like, make sure that you're getting support for this. Certainly we would love to provide that support for you if you have some extra questions. But you know, I would highly recommend Phil get some support for himself so he knows how to approach this and make sure that he has the best chances at success. All right. Heather's continuing in there with the comments. Second question here. Ken is asking, saying, I acted as if everything was my way. Drinking problem. She claims we grew apart. Ken has been 200 days sober, claiming her son moved out because of me. Currently separated and talking several times each week. Has tried sending messages but says everything just backfires and he honestly can't, he doesn't know what to do. Okay. Right here, it seems to me that we're once again talking about viability and can things be salvaged? It seems to me, actually, interestingly enough, I think the path back to this relationship is probably not going to be about discussing the relationship itself. There's a really significant statement in this question that Ken posted here, in that his wife is claiming that her son moved out because of Ken. And I'm going to guess the degree to which Ken is able to support his wife with that situation is probably the degree to which that she will engage in relationship talk and the ability to come back together. I'm guessing a lot of the messages that he is sending he's saying are backfiring. It's because there's this big pain here that's not being addressed directly. I'm wondering like what Ken and his wife are talking about. I mean, I'm guessing that there's still some amount of connection there. Otherwise, there wouldn't be as much discussion as is happening. It's very likely that his wife just is having difficulty reconciling that problem, that her son moved out and like there's these other issues with the relationship. And how do we fix the issues with her son? How do we fix the issues with the relationship? And so she just backs off and gets upset and is reminded about all the hurt that's happened in the relationship. So is this viable? Once again, I'm going to have this conditional sort of answer. I think that the degree to which Ken can address the issue around his wife's son, that's going to have a huge impact. Like if he can help her feel secure that solution is solvable, that's going to have a huge impact in his ability to work on the relationship. And so if that can be settled, then I do think that there's some really good chances. Now, does that mean that I'm suggesting go and fix that on your own first? No, I do not. I'm always going to be recommending get support. These are huge issues. And I will point out that statistics aren't really great for separated couples unless they're getting a good amount of quality support. So please get support. Even if I'm telling you, fix that problem first, get help with that, even perhaps with us, get help with that, and then you can probably much more likely work on the marriage. All right. I'm just going down the list here, and I'm seeing a question in the comments, not from Heather, this is from Gary. Gary's saying that he's been separated 14 months, they live 3 hours apart, and he's going to go visit his wife today. What should I say to her? Also, how do I deal with the third person in the marriage? So that's a bit of a different situation from these others that we've been going through. It sounds to me like third person in the marriage. I think Gary's referring to an affair. We have some other struggles of having a large amount of physical separation. 3 hours apart is a good amount of distance. And so how do you have that impact there? How do you fix things when there's so much distance between the two of you? Affairs are tricky. There's a lot of little questions, a lot of little details that kind of need to be examined when we're looking at affairs. First and foremost in my mind is the consideration of, like, how serious is the affair? How repentant is the cheating partner in the situation? How much are they looking at that affair as, like this guilty thing that they're engaged in versus, you know, how much are they looking at it as a solution to their problems? I would say that in many cases, you know, affairs can be seen as this solution, and they'll look at it as, okay, things are going poorly in my marriage and here's this way out. And it's hard for people to put that down. Even further, you know, I know a lot of other experts out there, they might look at affairs and they might say, okay, boundaries, let's let your husband or wife know that this is inappropriate and they need to stop. And if they don't stop, then we bring the hammer down. And I'm not sure if that's always the best course of action, because when push comes to shove in some of these scenarios, the cheating partner might say, well, I'm not seeing a lot of solutions in the marriage. Let's go over here to the affair relationship. So by default, a lot of times how I approach affairs is more of like this carrot and stick approach, where we demonstrate solutions in the marriage, show how things could be better, while having a healthy approach to boundaries. Boundaries quite frequently, I think, are done incorrectly in a lot of situations, you know, but in this case, I mean boundaries as like having some clear expectations, but having a way through the boundaries. As in, if Gary's wife wants to be engaged with, like, wants to interact and engage with Gary, if this is the boundary, like, how does that work for Gary, and how do they do that in a healthy way? Like, having a way through that is all I'm saying. I mean, I know I'm being somewhat vague in this, but Gary further is asking, well, what do I say to her? That's a hard question to answer without knowing a lot more details. But, you know, if I had to give some good general advice, I always tell my own clients, I say, okay, let's make sure that your own messaging is very conscientious and clear. Like, what kind of narrative are you trying to build up within the relationship, Gary? Are you trying to build up this sort of story or narrative that the two of you can work through things, that you are there to support your wife, that you are willing to work through anything, but that you need to set some boundaries? If that's the kind of narrative that you're trying to build, that dictates a lot of your actions when involved with your spouse. And, you know, if that's not clear in the relationship, Gary's asking what should be said. I'd probably be recommending clearing up a lot of that messaging, making sure that your intentions and where you want to take things is very crystal clear, and that you're demonstrating that message yourself. So that's kind of my thoughts with Gary. Let's see. I am seeing a lot of, I'm just going to keep on going down the list until Heather's going to be bossing me around a bit today. Heather's going to just tell me when to stop or when I need to shift my focus. Otherwise, I'm going to be going down the list. So if you have questions, put it in the chat. And remember, the theme here today is this situation viable? Is this fixable? And what can we do with this? Laura Laura says, back in 2005, I lost $20,000, which is a good amount. And he said he can't forget it, but I never knew that was still an issue. I think he's using this as an excuse of having an affair after he got caught. He's now bringing this up. I think he's just using this as an excuse for his affair. Really interesting take on them. My first reaction to this is, can it be an excuse for the affair, and can there be some legitimacy to what he's saying? I would say by default, the ideal for a relationship when there are big problems like this, the ideal here is, when problems come up, that there's collaboration between the two partners to resolve big issues. I see problems come up when it becomes a bit of an either or situation, or a winner loser scenario, or someone where someone's going to get their way and someone is not. As in, I'm with Laura, one of my concerns here with her talking about this and her husband's affair is, is the desire to just put this affair behind them. Well, I can see that creating this either or sort of scenario where either we put this behind us or Laura's husband wins and we don't talk about it, or we actually deal with it, which I imagine is what Laura actually wants to do. Someone wins and someone loses. And that's absolutely not the right way to look at these scenarios if you want to actually get through it and survive. A more healthy way to approach these things is to take a look at this and say, how do we work together? How do we collaborate and create a situation where we can both be happy? Now, I'm making a lot of assumptions here, Laura's saying, okay, he got caught with this affair. He's bringing this up as an excuse. I'm imagining that Laura's husband probably is saying, let's forget about this and let's move on. Let's still keep the marriage together. That's my assumption. So my question for Laura then would be, under what circumstances would it work to keep the relationship and to keep going forward? These are the questions that you each need to ask yourself. For Laura's husband, it's like, under what circumstances does it work, once again, to stay in the marriage and to leave the affair behind, to be more open about the conversation? Now, I know it's not as easy as, like me just snapping my fingers and say, work together on this. Absolutely, that's not the case. And I know it's, not a simple thing to say, okay, let's get on the same side or anything. But in this sort of scenario, it is important. And I'm going to default back to my other suggestions, and I'm going to keep coming back to this. These are tricky situations, and Laura should get some support with this. How to make sure that Laura is handling boundaries in a healthy manner. How to make sure that things aren't getting swept under the rug. How to make sure that the two of you are moving forward and you're not just ignoring some issues for the sake of staying together. A lot of pitfalls are possible here if you do not go about this in a healthy way. Okay. I'm going to touch base back with Ken just for a second here. I was just talking about Ken a little bit ago, and Ken is replying to one of the things that I was just talking about. So Ken is saying, Sunna said it wasn't all me, but I've heard from her that his dad is just putting things in his head. That does, it doesn't change things entirely a whole lot. I think the advice remains the same with Ken. Remember, Ken's situation was that his wife was blaming Ken that her son left. And even though Ken's wife's son isn't putting that blame on him, there needs to be some way to resolve that hurt there. And the degree to which Ken's wife can feel supported in that is probably the degree to which they can come together and work things out. Much like I was just saying with Laura, there needs to be a sense of collaboration and teamwork here. So we're going to go on to Francisco. So Francisco is saying, my question, 3 years physically separated. She will not speak of separation or divorce. We have no legal separation or divorce. She is now introducing her partner to their young adult kids. What is the best way to bring up divorce without feeling, I'm guessing it says as push, I'm guessing feeling pushed. So here's the thing. If Francisco, this doesn't even seem to be a question about whether this is salvageable or whether this can be fixed. It's more like, how do you deal with this now? Some of the things that Heather and I talk about, we're saying, hey, there's a lot of situations that can be fixed. Some circumstances make that extremely difficult, and chances aren't super high. One of those being where one partner is developing a committed relationship with someone else. And if there's been separation for many years, and now Francisco's wife is starting to introduce her partner to other people, that starts to demonstrate some level of comfort with that relationship, some level of commitment. Now, could things turn around? It's possible, but it's not very likely. But Francisco's question is more about, like, how do you actually bring up divorce? You know, like my flippant or my kind of like gut reaction is to say, well, you know, if Francisco wants divorce, doesn't need his wife's permission for that. He can just go ahead and start that process. I imagine it'd be extremely painful, extremely hurtful to see your wife developing a committed relationship with someone else. And I wouldn't blame Francisco if he's saying, you know, that's a bit too much, and I don't think I can handle that. This is a bit of a matter of boundaries, and one of the things that I like to tell people is if you're going to set a boundary, make sure it's over something that you can control yourself, and you don't need cooperation from the other person in order to enact it. So if the boundary here is Francisco is going to get divorced, well, then you need to take action in such a way that doesn't necessarily require your wife's cooperation. Now, I was just saying a little bit earlier, like boundaries, there should be a way out of it, a healthy way out of it, if that's what you want. And, you know, for Francisco, I would certainly think that that would involve, you know, committing to the relationship again, leaving the affair partner behind. I think a lot of that would have to happen before any sort of consideration of salvaging the relationship would be considered. Revisiting Laura for a second. and Laura's saying, I tried to and he won't let me. As in, let's see. As it, and I, Laura, I'm going to ask you to clarify that. Like you've tried to, you've tried to fix this. You've tried to talk about it. You've tried to settle your husband into, like, discussing a solution. I'd like to get back to you, Laura. So please let me know. We're just going to keep going down the list here. to whatever extent this is helpful. I'm hoping this is very helpful to the people who are asking these questions. Heather puts in the fourth question. And this is coming from Heather. It's probably not Heather Choate. I'm guessing this is a different Heather. So, other Heather is saying, my husband grew up in a culture where heavy drinking is prevalent, and I have a lot of trauma around drinking. We're trying to work things out, but don't see eye to eye on what is healthy, and this is one of our stalemates. My husband wants freedom to drink as much as he wants, as he sees fit, and I do not think this is healthy or a good model for my children, and I also feel very unsafe with drinking in general. He feels like it's his autonomy if this is taken away, which I guess it is in a sense, because we don't agree on what is reasonable. Heather is currently separated. They talk every day, but fight and argue all the time. Well, we're going to revisit some themes here. And it's really important in these matters to take a stance of cooperation and collaboration. Now, I'm sure, you know, this Heather is going to say, well, I'm trying to find some solution that works for the two of them. And this is difficult. What I've observed over the many years, and I've worked in mental health for about 15 years now. And I will tell you that if you have someone who doesn't agree to the solutions presented, there's no way that you're going to get someone to engage in healthy behavior that tries to push for the solution. Like, basically, you know, like, very much so in the case of, like, say, addiction or substance use. If the person doesn't believe that there's a need to reduce the amount of drinking, it's not going to matter how much you really push them to stop drinking or to reduce drinking. They're not going to cooperate. And, you know, this is where a lot of these arguments probably are coming from. It's probably this Heather trying to convince her husband that it's the right thing to do to reduce drinking, to quit drinking. And those sort of scenarios are at the same time frustrating and, in my opinion, aren't all that useful. Like, if you're in a position where you're having to convince someone to make some change, you're not in the right spot. Can couples come together and convince their partner to make some changes? Yeah, I think that's something that can happen, especially with a couple where each individual is being very cooperative. They're collaborating on solutions. I think that's a fine scenario. It's these scenarios where there isn't really even that motivation or recognition of a need to change that can make it really difficult to get any sort of cooperation from them. So what do you actually do with that? I would say, if I had to guess further, you know, the separation that's going on, it's neither Heather nor her husband really feel or believe that there is a solution to the issue. Heather Choate, my business partner, and I, we call this the impossible problem. And it's usually the issue that is pushing people towards separation or divorce. The kind of the thought here is, okay, here's this impossible problem. If we don't have a solution for it, it becomes easier to pull away and to disconnect because there's nothing that can be done. And this is usually the cause of divorce, whether that impossible problem is a difference in sex drive or resentment because of an affair or whatever it happens to be. We don't see a solution, so we disconnect. For Heather and her husband, they don't see the impossible problem here is they don't see a way to have a healthy middle ground. Heather, you know, is, you know, she's describing herself as sensitive to alcohol consumption, and her husband wants to maintain some choice and not feel controlled in the relationship. if they are going to make this work, then, you know, like, once again, they need to be on the same team. For Heather's husband, you know, there has to be something motivating here enough to make some changes. And maybe not necessarily to the level of his alcohol usage, but, like, having some accommodations to help Heather feel safe or secure within the relationship. Like, I could absolutely see a scenario where, you know, potentially Heather's husband continues drinking, but there's a lot of work done to help Heather feel like things are okay within the relationship, or that the drinking is limited so it doesn't, you know, to certain places or certain times, so that it doesn't feel like it's having as much of an impact. And this is like what I've been saying, all, you know, with a lot of these cases, a lot of this can be solved if the couple comes together and says, okay, here's a problem and our relationship is important. We're committed to work through problems. Let's come together and work on a solution together. And I feel like that's not going on in the case of Heather. That people have stopped at the point of the proposed solution. They say, stop drinking, or no, I need to have my freedom. And they don't explore it any deeper than that. Much like with a lot of these scenarios, I would recommend some professional help, because I, you know, if we can crack that open and say, hey, look, there's other solutions beyond just stop drinking, or just get, you know, make sure that you aren't feeling controlled. And if we can get to that point, I think there's a lot that can be done there. All right. I'm going to keep going through here. Let's see. Heather's saying, do we have any other questions? Did Mark help? I'm seeing a lot of follow-up. A lot of follow-up here. I'm going to try to address all these follow-up questions and comments as well. So we're going to continue with Laura. I haven't discussed the loss. We live together. We don't talk. I try and I just get one word in. Gotcha. So if we're coming back to Laura, remember Laura lost the money. Her husband has had that resentment. He had an affair. So that's really helpful information on my end, Laura, to understand what's going on. We call this stonewalling. So if there's this lack of communication, we get one word responses. I mean, that's pretty much the definition of stonewalling. Not a good scenario. I mean, we know from Dr. Gottman's theories, stonewalling is a precursor to divorce, if that's a consistent behavior within the relationship, or it's a predictor of divorce. I wouldn't say it's absolutely a precursor. When we're talking about stonewalling, we have to understand why that's there. And I can only make some general assumptions about the situation. So I assume that Laura's husband isn't talking because either he feels like talking isn't going to be productive, as in is he going to feel judged? Are things going to be uncomfortable for him? Does he feel like his position in the conversation is not going to be considered? Is it just going to be dismissed? Like, these are a lot of things that really play into building up these defenses and stonewalling a partner. Like, it's because the person stonewalling doesn't feel confident in their ability to navigate a difficult conversation, so they just don't respond. The first approach that I have in a lot of those scenarios is, I like to encourage what are called here and now conversations. This is like a interviewing strategies sort of theory or sort of idea. Meaning, like, you know, in marriage sessions, couple sessions, like we see scenarios like this all the time where someone is quiet and reserved and not wanting to talk. So what do we do in these scenarios? The here and now conversation, what it's referring to is, instead of talking about, say, in Laura's case, the affair or the fight that's happening or the tension around, or talking about like the dinner that needs to be made or whatever it happens to be, you're calling attention to the thoughts and the emotions that are going on in that moment between the two people. I suspect that's probably a bit of what's going on, is there's a lot of focus on the affair or whatever fight is going on in that moment. And, you know, Laura's probably desperately trying to get her husband to talk to her about something. When I think an easier topic of discussion is like, is the discomfort in being able to talk, if that makes sense. These are really helpful in a lot of scenarios, a lot of situations, especially when there's a lot of quiet or a lot of reserved behavior in some of these really frustrating, intense situations. It's a lot about being curious and making observations. So for Laura, it would be about commenting on some of the perceived discomfort that her husband might have in having some conversation. Just being curious about that, asking some questions. You know, as an example, Laura might go to her husband and say, "Hey, look, I've noticed that when I've tried talking about things, you get really quiet. And I'm curious about that, and I'm concerned, and I want to figure that out because I really care about you." And you hear what I'm saying in this example. It's a very soft approach. It's about creating this kind of safe harbor for things to be shared. It's about really clarifying intentions and, you know, like why we're approaching the conversation. Now, am I going to pretend like, okay, Laura, if you go and use these words, it's automatically going to open things up? I'm not going to say that, but I do think that trying that approach is more likely to get some success. These sort of scenarios are a lot more complicated than a single silver bullet, the one conversation that solves everything. And more often it's a lot about building up a specific atmosphere or a specific narrative. And it generally involves several attempts at having these calmer, productive conversations before the unwilling partner says, okay, maybe this is safe enough for me to engage. And that's very likely what needs to happen here with Laura and her husband, is many attempts to be curious, to create a safe space for sharing and to invite her husband to participate. And, you know, after several attempts, it's going to be much more likely to take hold, because, you know, especially if Laura's been consistent with that. All right. We're going to be taking like one or two more cases here. Please let me know. Please let Heather, my business partner, know if this is helpful. If this is of service to our audience, if it's really helpful for me to sit here and answer some questions, we wouldn't mind making this a regular occurrence. This is, you know, we're always very open to feedback and to, you know, consideration of where we want to take our content. So please let us know in the comments if this is useful, of use to all of you. I'm going to get to the last couple things that Heather Choate is putting here in the chat. So Heather is saying, okay, our fifth topic here is Mark. Obviously, you know, it's not myself, but so Mark is saying, wife wants a divorce and it's all my fault, is what Mark's saying. I haven't been the husband she fell in love with. Due to my mental issues, my anger, my anxiety issues. She's had an affair and maybe more. I'm just lost and I don't know who I am. And I don't know how to give space because of the emotional roller coaster I'm still in. Mark continues saying, I wasn't a good person during our marriage. I was abusive and I'm getting help now. It was due to my mental trauma, my anxiety, my childhood trauma and abandonment issues. Mark continues saying she had an affair, maybe more than just one. I know about that, and it's left me feeling emasculated and worthless as a man. So there we have further information, Mark saying that they are living together, that they talk every day. That's a rough situation. Not only do we have a lot of history or baggage, we have some marks acknowledging some really concrete hurt that has been caused. So there, like Mark saying, hey, he hasn't been a saint here. And then on top of that, there's an affair. In beyond this, Mark's wife is saying that she's wanting a divorce. And so in these scenarios, what we look at is, you know, Mark's wife is saying, okay, here's this divorce over here. Here's this affair over here. These are solutions to feeling better, is oftentimes how these options are looking. And that's a hard thing to wrench away from someone. If you say, no, please come back to me, we'll make things work. That's a solution that's on a really unstable, shaky sort of foundation, as opposed to here's this hope that things could be better off over here, the divorce or the affair. So oftentimes the challenge in these situations is like, how do we make sure that even the marriage or working on it itself feels at all viable, like that it is an actually stable or sturdy or just plausible situation or solution to get out of some of the pain that the other person is experiencing. For Mark, that's difficult given, you know, the severity of the issues that have happened. You know, I imagine if he's experienced trauma, abandonment issues, all of these, and has all these other issues, there's probably been a lot of, you know, bluntly speaking, a lot of evidence that things aren't working. Sometimes Heather and I talk about trying to approach a situation, trying to get it to the point where their spouse can put a pause on the divorce. It's not necessarily that the spouse is now 100% committed. They're saying, okay, I'm willing to see what can happen here. And that is probably, you know, in terms of like where we're trying to aim for Mark, would probably be the first major goalpost that we'd be looking at. You know, I know a lot of the other scenarios, we're trying to get it to the point where it feels stable and they can put a pause on any sort of separation or divorce proceeding. But, you know, especially here with Mark, and a lot of that's going to involve, you know, like demonstrating to Mark's wife that some of these problems are solvable. We can't actually focus on the affair at this point. We can't focus on stopping the divorce at this point. I'm going to say it's not important. Of course, it's important, but it's not something that can be considered because it's too many steps removed from where Mark and his wife are right now. And so we look at what's right in front of Mark. We say, okay, what does he have control over? Where can he make some impact here? And it's, like I said, it's not going to be in whether his wife is having an affair or not. I'm going to be a bit blunt with this. And I'm going to say, okay, well, you're feeling emasculated, Mark, or worthless. You got to do something about that. You essentially, like, this is not a good situation, but there has to be some ownership in this, in that, in some recognition that to a certain extent you have contributed to the state that the marriage is in. Now, I'm not commenting on this to say, well, shame on you, Mark, and you're this terrible person. But I'm also going to point out that, you know, just as you have contributed to the state of the relationship now, you also have the ability to make an impact to reverse some of that. And, you know, I'm going to tell you that your wife is very unlikely to abandon the prospects of an affair or a divorce if these other issues feel uncertain, if the solutions to them feel uncertain. And so very much in Mark's case, I would be doing a lot to emphasize the healthy things that he's doing in his life and to build that up as part of the narrative. Like, these solutions are so important to Mark that the marriage is a little bit secondary, that his wife is having an affair is a bit secondary. And that might not seem fair. Like, of course, affairs are bad and whatnot. But, and like I said, I'm being blunt here. You know, you've lost the trust of your wife, that you can be a stable, productive, healthy partner to be with. So you, Mark, need to demonstrate that you can be the partner that you know you can be. You have the ability to be a healthy person to be with. And if you can demonstrate that, you have the ability to go to your wife and say, hey, look, here are all these changes. Can we start to consider another route here beyond divorce, beyond engaging in this affair? And until you get your act together, you can't really ask your wife to put a pause on things or to come back. We would love to support you in making that happen. But I do think, like, when we're talking about, are things viable? Is this viable and whatnot? Well, it is if you can, you know, get your own stuff in line here. Last question. We got 5 minutes. Donna's asking, you know, so Donna's saying she's currently divorced, wants to get back together with her ex-husband. They talk a few times a month. They've been having text conversations since August when his disabled son became ill with COVID. He would send podcasts of baby care for their new grandson. He would send me podcasts of relationship issues. And then all of a sudden, this past week, he says he doesn't feel comfortable having friendly banter. They're divorced. You know, like, so here's this excuse. We're divorced. We shouldn't have this friendly banter. Perhaps they need to move on. But Donna is saying, I'm not okay with that because I'm still in love with him. I know there's potential, and I know I've changed my mindset and seen him for a different person. So is this viable? Can you rebuild a relationship after a divorce? And I will say, I've certainly seen it many times. Is that common? Is that easy? No, it's not common or easy, but have I seen it happen? Yeah, I've seen it happen a whole bunch of times. You know, Heather and I have been doing this, I want to say about 7 years. The date is a little bit shaky. It's about 7 years now. Just focusing on marriage issues. And I've seen a lot of relationships that have come back from near death or, you know, essentially, you know, being divorced and have come back together. Okay, Heather's confirming. It's been 7 years. I was thinking, is it 6 years or 7 years? It's been a while, Heather. It's been a good 7 years. I'll say that. Here's what's going on with Donna, and from my gut and instinct with all this. So here's Donna's husband, who says, "Well, there's a right way and a wrong way to be divorced." And That would be like my first gut impression. The second thing that might need to be addressed is like, okay, is he trying to move on and to be healthy? And that's actually like the more the conversations that should be happening. As in, rather than what are we supposed to do, what should we do? It's why would we want to do those things and having that discussion. Why would Donna's husband want to pull away? What would that mean for him? What would that accomplish? If he were to be less friendly, have less friendly banter, what would that create space for in his life? And that he might say, well, it would create some space for a healthy relationship or someone else. Okay. Well, what is he hoping to get from a new relationship potentially? And these are the kind of conversations that Donna could have with her husband or her ex-husband. We keep coming back to this theme of collaboration and positioning yourself as being on the same team. And I think that would work really well for Donna here, in that, if she's able to position herself in such a way to say, okay, well, these are the things that my ex-husband wants, these are the things that he's looking for. How are we supporting each other in these things that are wanted? It can be a kind of an awkward road back from divorce back into a committed relationship. So certainly, much like a lot of these other cases, we need to have a solution for the impossible problem. And Donna's ex-husband needs to see that there is some path through all that. But I do think that the first step is, in this sort of idea here, like, it's not right for us to have friendly banter anymore and, to get around that. So essentially what I'm getting at is there are solutions. Like if I had to sum everything up here, it's to say that there are like a lot of these situations on the surface look impossible. And what I'm going to point out is that there are solutions, there are paths through these scenarios that are viable here, whether that's an affair, whether that's being already divorced, whether that is, coming back from a lot of mistakes, or whether that's disagreements and values around alcohol or whatever it happens to be, there are paths through those problems. And whereas it might seem impossible in a lot of cases, with a little bit of willingness, you can go a long way. And you might be saying to me, Mark or Heather, but my partner isn't willing. And even that is a problem that can be tackled and that can be examined and addressed. In a lot of these cases, getting to the point of having a willing partner, it's just a matter of helping them feel secure in participating in some of these solutions. So, as I was saying, like I can see that there's a lot of people out there, a lot of our audience that is looking for some support. And certainly, Heather and I, we'd like to tackle this together. Hopefully we figure out the technology next time, but we don't mind having these things and helping you see where the beginning of that path is. So, if this was at all useful to you, like I said, like Heather's talking about in the chat, this is all useful, let us know. That's why Heather and I are here, is because we want to be of service to all of you. Sometimes we have to limit some of our time. We have because there's a lot of people in need. So if you do want some of that extra support, let us know. If you'd like to get some help directly from us, please let us know. That's kind of like the conclusion that I'd like to leave off on is we would love to help all of you. There are solutions to a lot of these problems. Lane, I see your comment there. Yep. I'm actually going to check on that. Yeah, and I do see you on my schedule. Yeah, looking forward to that conversation. Yeah. So hope all that was helpful. Let us know. I know I'm repeating myself here, and good luck with things. We would love to hear some of your your thoughts, your comments, your questions. We do take a look at a lot of this. So we'll try to get to it as we can. All right. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.